Welcome to our newest adventure for first responder wellness. No one fights alone. In-depth conversations about mental health and culture in the first responder space. We're joined by your co-hosts, Austin Pedersen and Brad Shepard.
The No One Fights Alone podcast. Austin had a last minute event come up that he had to bail out on me. So I'm flying solo, the solo seat of this airplane that we're flying here. But I've got a great opportunity and an interview here coming up with Gina Arlington. Gina, welcome to the No One Fights Alone podcast.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you on. This is awesome. Now, we don't know each other very well, but we know a lot of the same people. We have a lot of the same friends, and we're in the same community. Yes. And people talk so high of you. It's an honor to have you on. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you so much.
Well, Gina is a physical therapist. She has lost her ex-husband. Now, we'll get into that a little bit, but her ex-husband to suicide in 2021. Yep. Is that correct?
Correct.
And Gina's going to bravely tell us a little bit about the story and her life. But before we get into it, tell us a little bit about Gina. You've got a couple kids.
I do.
Running around that are awesome, apparently.
Yep. I have a 16-year-old son and an 18-year-old daughter. So my daughter graduated high school this May, and she's off to college, which thank goodness she's only going like less than an hour away from me, but she's going to stay on campus. Just off campus, I guess, but live at the school.
How's mom doing with that?
I'm trying not to think about it because it's going to change the dynamic. It's going to change the dynamic of the house. Sure. So then it'll just be my son and I. So it'll be different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just you and another guy, no other female relief.
No.
So you're going to have to handle all that testosterone solo.
Oh yeah. Cause they kind of talk to each other, and like, you know, when they're mad at me, they talk to each other and they kind of work things out. Instead of coming to me, they go to each other. So I'm hoping that they still have that communication when she's gone. We'll see.
Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. Well, so you're letting one fly out of the nest. Yes. That's a big, big deal. Yep. You know, if it's any consolation, I have 27 and 29-year-old boys that are still great friends, and they've been connected. I just moved them recently. They've lived together on and off since they were young, and we just moved. They now live about an hour from each other, which I'm curious to know how that's going to work out. So I understand a little bit about that, but you know, you're in a connected world. You have text messaging and FaceTime and, you know, all these things that I think your kids probably are well aware of of the tech age.
Yeah. Way more than I am.
So you're a physical therapist by trade?
I am. I work with children and adults with special needs.
Wow. That must take an incredible amount of heart to do what you're doing. What a great heart.
Yes. I mean, I love it. I love it. Yeah. It keeps me going too. My own kids and then my work kids. Yep.
So I asked you this question a while ago and you stammered around a little bit. What does Gina do for fun?
That is funny. You know, it's work and then home life. Like I haven't branched out, and I've kind of tapped into a couple different things when nothing kind of stuck, because I'm busy with work a lot. So
sure. No big glaring hobbies. No, I like to bike ride 200 miles a day.
No.
I
like
paint. No, knit. You don't look like much of a knitter.
I'm that. Not.
You look more active. Yeah.
No, I
can't. Well, I did get to.
Nope.
But you still live in Florida, which I love Florida, by the way. I think I would love to live in Florida.
Not now. It's really hot right now.
Oh, it's hot here in Oklahoma. It is blazing here. Well, I had the opportunity to hear you speak about a year ago, a year and a half ago, at the Survive First Gala.
Yes.
I think, was that their first
gala?
That
was their first gala.
I think that was their inaugural, right?
Yes, it was.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it was awesome.
It was amazing.
Karen Karen does such a great job.
They are. Yes. Yes. They do an amazing job. And then this past one was really good too.
It was. It was. Mm-hmm. I actually was going to go say hi to you at that one and we got busy. I don't think I got to.
Nope. I think we just passed each other.
I got bogged down in some conversations and that one. So Doug and Karen, shout out to Survivors. Yes. Doug and Karen Monda do an absolute fabulous job on advocating and promoting health and wellness for first responders and their galas. If you ever get an opportunity to go to one of their galas, Karen puts on a fantastic event.
Yes.
For sure. Well, so you also sit as a advisory committee chair on Survivors of Blue Suicide.
Yes, I do.
What does that entail a little bit? I know we'll get into it a little bit, but that's part of kind of getting to know you a little bit.
Yeah, so I just sit on their committee for survivors, and I do kind of like the Southeast United States. And if there is a suicide in law enforcement or first responder in the southern states, then I'm contacted, and then I'll contact the department, the family, if we have information on them, and just kind of explain to the families that who we are and that we're here to help and guide through the traumatic event that they've just been through, and saying that you're not alone. You're not alone. There are other people here that we can help each other. So,
you know, that's an amazing organization, and it's a branch off of Concerns of Police Survivors. And having worked with Concerns of Police Survivors for so many years, I find my personal discovery with Concerns of Police Survivors is how uniquely gifted they are at connecting people. And Survivors of Blue Suicide is a branch off of Concerns of Police Survivors, and they are doing the same thing.
Yes.
They're connecting. Correct me if I'm wrong, connecting these survivors, people so of suicide loss, and this feeling of I'm alone or I'm the only one out here, they're connecting these people to where they realize, hey, you're not alone, you're not by yourself. And so that's just a little, again, shout out to both Concerns of Police Survivors and Survivors of Blue Suicide.
Yes.
So such a great connecting or two organizations. They're a little bit together, but they're such a great organization. So a shout out to them and their connection. So, well, that's awesome. Your plate is full. So you, yeah. Your hobby is Survivors of Blue Suicide. Then really is what I'm
honestly
hearing.
Yeah. And you know, and what I like, we call each other like widsters. So my widow friends. So we connect because honestly, without them, I wouldn't be where I am like today. I mean, without their support, oh my goodness.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's take us on a little journey. Take us on a little story journey, because I know the listeners, now we've kind of painted a picture of who you are, but how did you get here?
Okay.
And I know this is a story that's probably going to be a little unpleasant for you and possibly the listeners, but these stories need to be told.
Yes.
And to quite honestly, to honor these people who have sacrificed. So take us on a little story,
sure.
Gina.
So I consider, even though I'm legally an ex-spouse, I consider myself a widow, and I still call him my husband. So Brendan, sure. My husband was a Largo police officer in Largo, Florida, for 16 years. And we were married for 16 years. We had like a normal, like love story, you know, met, got married, had two children. He was in the academy and went through, and started working. He was a normal street cop for just a short amount of time. And then became a detective probably within 5 years of his service at Largo. And, I thought everything was normal, like having nightmares and him calling out calls in the middle of the night when he was sleeping. I thought that was normal. That was just part of the job and part of like just the stress. Didn't think anything about it. And, you know, we're adults. He drinks. Not a big, I guess I never thought anything about it until probably 2019. So in 2019, I noticed our relationship kind of change a little bit. He kind of stepped away from the family. I noticed he was like secluding himself from like his normal friends and us. And he started drinking just a lot more, but I just didn't think anything of it. Until one day he kind of like looked at me like, and it was just so weird. Like, I'm like, I don't know who you are. Like, I don't know who you are anymore. He just changed. Like, his demeanor changed. We had like an argument, and that very next day he walked out of the house and never came back. He moved out and said he was a burden on me and the family, and said that we're going to get a divorce. And I'm just like, can we just stay separated? You know, I didn't want to give up, but I didn't know what else to do because I wanted to protect the kids. So he moved out, but was on leave at work because of his severe anxiety and what I consider was PTSD, but he couldn't work and he couldn't be the normal Brendan, the doting father, the loving like husband. Like, he wasn't that anymore. So his department, which is fantastic, sent him to rehab down south in Fort Worth. It was supposed to be a first responder, I'm trying to think exactly the words of it, but it's supposed to be a first responder program, which they had, but he was the only first responder there. So I don't know. He told me, because we still talked, even though we were legally separated and getting a divorce. He would talk to me every day and he would just tell me what was going on down there. But I'm not sure like what happened, but he came back an empty shell, like empty.
Can I pause right here? Because there's a couple of things that I think I'm finding really interesting about this, which is I want to back us up here a little bit. So you met him at this, you know, if I'm doing the math right, I took my shoes off and can use my toes as well. So if I do the math right, so you met at the same time he is a rookie police
before.
Officer.
So okay, right we before. Met before he was ready to go into Secret Service. That was his plan. We met and he said, I want to be with you. I can't go into the Secret Service, but I still want to be an officer. So, sure.
So you knew him, you knew the Brendan before law enforcement.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Got their claws in him. Right. Yep. So, and I use this terminology loosely because I am one, but I also know the impact that law enforcement has and the hold that it has on you in some capacities. So if I fast forward a little bit in that conversation, you also said, I just assumed some of it was, and I'm may put words in your mouth there a little bit. So you correct me if I'm wrong, but the nightmares and the drinking, and you said something else, were just normal.
I assumed with a stressful job like that, that was kind of what I anticipated. That was just a normal thing that, well, you see really bad stuff. Of course you're going to, you know, wake up with yelling out calls. Like, he would wake up and I'm like, hey, you're in bed. Like, it's okay. You're not there.
Right.
Yep.
You're safe.
Yep. You're safe. Everything's fine. You're not. And then he would go right back to sleep.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Did this transition happen where you said you don't know me, or I don't know you, this disconnect? Did you feel like this? I mean, I know you said you felt like it was just like almost an overnight thing, but do you feel like that transition was slow and gradual, or it was just, there was an aha moment of something significant has happened here on the disconnect.
I think it was, like, looking back, I think it was maybe everything that he saw all put together, and then that one extra straw on that camel's back kind of broke him. Right. But looking, when I mean, I've had to look back into his cases, and I've noticed that the brunt of his really traumatic cases that he dealt were 2017 to pretty much 2020 were like the most, what I would consider horrific, and things right. that I didn't even know about, because he knew what he can tell me and what he couldn't, because I'm like, I'm very emotional. Like, I didn't want to hear everything. The way I got through that he was working was that he sat behind a desk all day. I know for sure that he never did, but that's how I got through the day, that he sat sure. behind a desk and that was it. But
so on some levels, he was protecting you as well.
Oh, 100%. Oh, me and the yeah. kids. Always. Sure. Always.
Sure.
Fit like always.
So you got a lot of, I'm fine, I'm good, I'm okay.
Oh, yes.
I'm doing great.
Yep, let me do it on my own yeah. type of thing.
Yeah.
Especially yeah. towards the I'll end. Do. I'm good, I can handle it on my own. And I'm like, yeah. you, yeah, you are, because he always did. He always was able to yeah. handle everything on his own. Sure. And I didn't know that the drinking was his handle. Towards the end of his life, he started to drink significantly more, but it also affected him more. So it didn't even, sometimes it didn't even make a difference. One drink could have affected his personality. It changed who he was.
In, I'm assuming, a negative way.
Very, like, he just wasn't around. It just was, he was like an empty soul. Like, he wasn't there. Yeah. It was, I've never seen that change in front of my eyes before. Yeah.
Right. Right. Okay. So, kind of picking us back up to where we were, at where I interrupted you. He's at a treatment center that is, is advertising their first responder specific, but he's not, he's the only first responder. He's the only cop there flying solo.
He is the only cop there. He had, there was a former cop that was his mentor. So there were first responder mentor, but he was the only one surrounded by other people, just regular Joes.
Do you feel like that helped any when he got back, when he returned from?
I think he got worse. I honestly think he was worse when he got back. Mm-hmm. And then
what did that look like? If you don't mind me asking, what does that look like? It was like more isolation, maybe more anger, maybe, you know, what would
it was an empty shell, like,
okay,
just an empty, yeah. just there was no care. There was no care for anything. No, there was no life in him anymore. It was very yeah. strange. And that, like, when he came back that next day, he said, "We're getting a divorce." He's like, "That's it." And I was just like, okay. Like, I just gave in to everything he said. I gave in. I'm like, okay. Cause I knew nothing that I said fighting for anything was going to make him better. Like, I wanted to do, I'm like, anything that he wanted, I did, because hoping that it would make him better. So, yeah. And then that was his first rehab. And then he went back 6 days later. He didn't make it a full week.
Same facility?
Same facility. They went to the same, and okay. I did not know. His officers were helping out and they did a lot. They kind of kept me out of the loop a little bit because they knew that we were separated and they didn't know how to navigate it. They didn't.
Sure. I could see that. Very messy.
they weren't sure if they brought me in and told me everything, then they wouldn't have his best needs, because then if he can say certain things, like, they were just afraid of exactly what he would do if they found out that they were talking to me. He might have had an issue and they couldn't really connect with him. That sure. was there. That, and I found all this out afterwards. Like, sure, they told me, like, hey, the whole reason why we kept you guys, like, everything separate and didn't tell you was because we wanted his confidence. We wanted his full everything. And if we weren't sure if he would have gotten mad and then not have confided in us. And I'm like, okay, I understand. Like, I understand. But, sure, but yeah, 6 days later, he ended up returning to that same rehab because they didn't know where else to take him. They said he was already set up. They already knew. They called there. They were ready for him. And that second round, I think, helped a little bit because he had a different counselor and he wasn't he didn't manipulate him. So he definitely was, that first round, he called every single day. I'm like, why are you allowed to call? He's like, well, you know, I have to check in or whatever. I'm like, no, take care of yourself. We're fine. That second round, he's like, I'm only allowed to contact you twice a week. And I'm like, that's fine. You know, that's okay. So he'd contact me twice a week when he was allowed to. And I think him focusing there made a difference. So he did get, I will say, when he came back, he was a little better.
So you saw something different after the second treatment tour for him.
Yep. Yeah. He seemed to get his kind of like, he seemed maybe a little happier and he seemed to be doing a little bit better, but that was short-lived because he went right back to drinking again. Maybe a couple months later. Yeah. So in the span of February to May, June, July, maybe February to August, September of 2020. He was kind of in and out of rehab. And then it's around August that he started drinking again.
So let me change the perspective here a little bit, because you're telling a story about Brendan.
Yes.
But what's going on with Gina during all this?
So it was during COVID and I wasn't working because the kids that I was working with were compromised. So we decided not that I wasn't going to work to save my patients. The kids were in virtual school, so I had to monitor their virtual school. Gosh, that was it.
That's a great answer on a very superficial level. How's this impacting you?
I was a mess. Like, a mess. I did a lot of yard work, a lot of housework to keep my mind busy. So whatever I needed to do, I was like, I walked a lot. Like, I, whatever it was to just get out of the house to just figure things out. And yeah, I walked and I talked to family and friends. This is pretty much the only way I was making it through, because I cried morning and night.
Yep, sure.
Yeah, of course. It was that emotionally drained.
Sure.
For not just that, the potential end of our marriage, but the scared that my husband was in rehab and not doing well, and I couldn't help him.
Course, because you cared about it.
Oh yeah.
There are so many things as you're sitting here telling this story. There's so many things that are in flux that are major parts of your life, that are, as I hear you describing them, you're relinquishing control of these things and saying, okay, whatever, to keep you healthy.
Yes.
Is that fair?
Yep. Very fair.
Man, what, that's gotta be incredibly heavy. Get it. So yeah. If we pick it back up, if we pick it back up and he's back from his second treatment stay,
yes.
He's back to drinking again.
And he's back at work now. He got cleared to go back to work. He got he got cleared to go back to work in June of 2020. He got cleared back to work. And he was back to normal street cop. And I think they made him go on, like they monitored him.
Now, were you all separated at the
time?
We
were separated.
Of this?
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Yep. So, so what he told me, he was like, oh, I'm doing my AA. I'm contacting this other place. He went to like UCF Restores, but it was just virtual. He did, there's a couple things that he did, all virtual or all online. But then he still was, went back to work and is still working. So we did not see him a lot at all.
Right.
Like at all. And I tried to kind of have the kids see him at like,
sure,
like once a week. But then when I noticed that he was drinking again, I kind of like didn't want to push it because it scared me. So I kind of said, no, like you can't take the kids, but you can come here. Like you can come here and see them, but you can't take them. So I know that hurt him, but I was protecting the kids because there was no way I was having my kids in his car or back at the condo that he was living at.
Sure. Of course.
Because I just didn't know what they would see and I was trying to protect them. But
which in and of itself, if I kind of put context to mm-hmm. that, in and of itself had to have been enormously hard. You're looking at the totality of this. Mm-hmm. You're trying to frame this out for the safety of him, you,
yep.
your marriage, mm-hmm. your children, you know, your future, his future. This is Gina's in a tough spot.
But I was just running on, I don't even know how I was running. I was just it was just whatever I needed to do. I just did it. And I'm like, all right, we need to get this done. Okay. Let's just do it. There was no thought. Like I just did it.
Right.
Like, okay, right. The kids need to do this. All right. I got it. The kid, you know, Brendan needs to do this. Okay. I'll figure it out. But a lot of the stuff was hidden from me too. So I didn't know everything that was going on in the background with him. I didn't know he was on suicide watch. I found that out after.
Wow.
I don't know from February. It was 11 months. So he left the house. I'm just going to say February 1st of 2020. And then he died January 21st, 21. So it was 11 months. And in that time, we were legally divorced, which was, I don't know how that even happened, how fast that went, but we were legally divorced in November and going through all of that as well. So anything that popped up, I'm like, all right, just do it. All right, let's just get, I just did. And not, there was no thinking of things. I'm like, let's just do it.
Very mission oriented, which is, you know, that's part of the first responder space that, you know, most first responders have, veterans have, and their families adopt that as well. This, we got to keep on charging. Got to make it happen.
Yeah. Yes. Never even thought about it. That I never even realized that way. It was just, all right, this is what we do. I just do it. So
January, take us to January and anything specific that led up to that, that you want to offer up to the listeners?
No. So I knew that he was drinking again by a tip from a friend, that said, I think he's drinking again. I didn't know into what extent. And I did notice in a picture that there was like a beer bottle next to him. And he did tell me, he's like, I didn't get drunk. I just had a couple of drinks. I didn't get drunk because I just called him out on it. And, but that, I'm going to say the week, cause he died on a Thursday. I will say that weekend before, so that Friday to Monday, he was with our son, and our son went to his condo. And, that Monday he calls me up and said that he fell down the stairs.
Brendan did, or your son did?
Brendan did.
Okay.
He's like, I fell down the stairs. I need to go. Maybe I had my son already before. I'm actually not sure now if he was by himself or if he had him in the house. I'm not sure, but he said he fell down the stairs, that he was taking out the trash and he fell down the stairs and he messed up his hand and that he needed to go to the emergency room. And he's like, I don't know what to do. So I said, give me 5 minutes. Let me finish up with my patient. Cause I was working. I started back to work. And he said, he's like, no, you can't take me. And I'm like, well, I'm here. If you need anything, I can take you. And then he ended up going by himself. I don't think it was broken. It was sprained maybe. And then I saw him that night. He had our dog, because he's like, can I have the dog every time the kids come over? And I'm like, sure. So we kind of like shared the dog, and I was like, fine. And so I picked up the dog. He's like, I can't take the dog this week. I'm like, okay. And he's like, yeah, Sean should go home with you too. I'm like, okay, which is our son. And then I talked to him that next day, like, how are you doing? And he's like, well, I'm on leave. I can't go back to work. So he was off of work for that week. And then Wednesday night we talked, and he said that he was so proud of me, of how I started my own business, and that he's so happy. I was dating somebody at that time. He said, I'm happy you have somebody in your life. He said, you know, it's okay if he meets the kids before I meet him. And I was like, no, we talked about anybody significant in our lives, we'd have them meet us before they meet our children. I was like, I am nowhere near that. Like, I just met this person, like, it is okay. And he said, so he was like, I don't know what's going to happen with the condo. They're not being really nice with me. And I'm like, we'll figure it out. I said, my job is slowly building. Like, we can, cause he was paying child support because he wasn't taking the kids. He only took the kids once every, like maybe 2 days, well, let's just say 4 days out of the month. And then I had the rest of the time. So he was paying. And I said, once things settle and things get, you know, build up for me, then we'll work on, you know, decreasing the amount. Then I can pay more to stay in our home. And because he didn't want me to move out of our marital home. He wanted me to stay here. He wanted the kids to stay here. He said, it's the kids' house and your house. You stay there. We'll work it out. And so I'm like, well, I can't afford it. And he said, I'll make sure and make it work. So even at that time, he still was caring for like me and the kids.
I hear it. I hear that in the story.
Yep. So he said, hey, you know, things are just, he just sounded down. And I'm like, what do you need? What do you want from me? Whatever. He's like, no, I'm good. He's like, I'm getting tired. I will talk to you tomorrow. Which that would be on Thursday, which was his 42nd birthday. And I can't recall if I called him and left a message or if I texted him, but it was like early, like 9 something in the morning after I dropped off my son to school. I called him and left a message, or I sent him a text like, happy birthday. I'm excited you're going out to dinner with one of your friends. Talk to you later or call me later, whatever it was. And then I was gone all day, and he was supposed to have dinner with one of his friends who was an officer. And I get a phone call from that officer saying, like, hey, have you heard from Brendan today? And I was like, no, I haven't. But I, you know, it was weird. Like, I didn't get a call that day because he religiously called or texted every single day. While we were married, separated, and divorced, every single day he still contacted me. And I'm like, I'm so confused. I don't understand somebody who says he doesn't love me anymore is still contacting me every day. And like, how he doesn't want me, but he wants me. I don't know. I was so confused. So I'm like, no, I didn't. I had the biggest pit in my stomach. And I'm like, something's not right. And I look over to my friend and I was like, something's not right. And he was like, do you need to go? And I was like, no, it is not my job to protect him anymore. It's not my job to save him anymore. He didn't want me anymore. I can't be there for him. Like, it's not my job anymore. And then later on that night, I get a message or I get a phone call saying, hey, I can't get into the condo, by the officer. And I said, he's not answering the door. And he's like, no. And I said, well, I don't know the code. I just had the key to get in and I don't know the code. And he said, I'll figure it out. Well, he got in and I didn't hear from him for a little bit. And then I got a phone call from the sergeant. And as soon as it said sergeant on my phone, because I had it saved in my phone, certain people's names, I lost it. I dropped to my knees, lost it. And he didn't tell me anything. He said, we need to see you. And I'm like, just tell me. And they're like, we can't tell you over the phone.
Right.
And I was 45 minutes away. So I had to drive 45 minutes. I don't know how I made it back. And they're like, we'll meet you at your house. I said, you cannot go to my house. My kids are there. Like, I can't have you go to my house. This is probably maybe 8 or 9 o'clock at night. I said, you can't go back to my house. So I met him in a parking lot at like a Circle K. And these two cops come out and they're together. And I knew, because I was, you know, like driving back. I'm like, well, maybe he's okay. Maybe they're, you know, whatever. And I'm like, no, they would have me go to the hospital. Like, I was playing different roles in my head.
Right.
The entire 45 minutes, seeing blurry because I was bawling my eyes out. And for the grace of God, that's the only way, like, I knew I had to stay alive for my kids, because I knew something bad happened. So I was trying to think of like, well, maybe he's not, maybe, you know, there's something that happened and they can't tell me, but he's still alive. Or maybe he's at the hospital, but I'm like, nope, they would have told me to go to the hospital, or they would have told me he's okay, but we need to talk to you. That, you know, so I kind of knew, but I didn't want to know. And so when they told me, and I'm like, what am I going to tell my kids? And this is when this part is, the part of Brendan dying is different. The part of me telling my children, that's the hardest part. And that's the part that I still get upset about. So I'm like, nope, I'm telling my kids. And the officers came back with me. I like stood, and the kids were on the couch, and I stood there. And I looked at them there. I'm like, I can't, like, I couldn't talk. Like, nothing would come out. And so they told my kids, and then my son ran to his room and my daughter sat there, and I was like, who do I support first? So my daughter looked at me and said, go to Sean. I'm okay. Which, yeah. Like, I was like, oh my gosh. So I went to him and consoled him, and then brought him back and consoled my daughter. But at that time, my daughter asked the officers, like, I need you to tell me. And she was 15. I need you to tell me what happened, and ask questions after questions. And so when I came back, and they said, listen, you know, that she did ask questions, and we told her, and I said, that's fine. And they said, like, they literally said, that's Brendan coming through her. Sure, because the way she asked those questions were him, like, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. But I mean, I don't know why he picked his birthday, I don't know what happened that night or that morning. No clue. His phone, unfortunately, was erased by the sheriff's office when they collected his phone and they couldn't get in it. And I said, let me just have at it. I know it. Like, you know, sometimes I'm like, sure. I think this is the number, but if I'm right there, I can do it. And they said no. And they must have done a factory reset to open it or somehow. I don't know how but everything was lost. All of his text messages, most of his pictures and videos were gone. And he was like our photographer. Like, he's the one that took all the pictures, and he's the one
that had all the photos in his phone.
All gone.
Yeah.
Except things that I didn't really want to see.
Yeah.
And then I had to become the detective and put pieces together of who he was with, who he might have dated, who might know some things. And I honestly turned into a detective. I put the pieces together in the puzzle and figured it all out. Not all, obviously, but
sure.
Yeah.
What a horrific night.
Yeah.
For you and your kids, and to not leave off the officers themselves, that the weight of having to share, you know, such horrific news to a spouse and
her
and ex-spouse. For all points and purposes, you've painted your story paints a very deep picture of how much he cared for his family.
Oh yeah. And that was number one.
Didn't know how to show it. Didn't know how to express it. Didn't know, he was lost.
Yep.
My heart goes out to you, Gina. What a brave story.
Thanks.
So let's keep moving forward a little bit, because your story doesn't end there.
No, his story doesn't. Yeah.
His legacy begins there. Yep. I have to admit, I even shared with you before, the funeral service is online. You can pull it up. I found it.
Yep.
And this brave daughter of yours.
Yeah.
Spoke.
Oh yeah.
At this funeral. And I got to tell you, I was about 2 minutes in and I'm like, nope.
Oh,
I can't do this.
I was very, very impressed with her. And I was so surprised that she was able to say the words so eloquently. And, you know, and it was kind of, she has a way with words. She loves to write. She loves to read, which is just like her father. But man, she got up and said a story, and it was amazing. It was amazing, because it wasn't just about like my daddy or whatnot. It was about, a little bit of the struggle that he went through that she saw, and about mental health, and that she didn't want him just to be another number.
Sure.
That she wanted people to remember him and not just what he struggled with. Oh, it was wonderful. But she did. And she said, if anybody, is having difficulties, reach out, because you can get help. Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing. And I'm so grateful that it's recorded.
You've clearly raised a couple of amazing humans.
Thank you.
So if we keep visiting about this journey, what happens next? Where does your life, what happens? What's happening? How do you navigate this with your own heartbreak, the heartbreak of your kids? How do you start moving on?
I did not know where to turn to. I didn't know what to do. Like, I didn't know where to go. I was in therapy. I put my daughter immediately. She was in therapy already, and I called that therapist and said she needs to be seen. We did some family therapy, but I mean, it was immediately was, we need to figure out financially how we're going to survive, and his estate, and figure out all of that. And I get every, I mean, there is, I mean, it was after a death, there's so many things that have to get done, and no grieving loved one should make these important decisions within 2 weeks after the death. So there was a lot of things that had, like, I needed to get health insurance because apparently we got kicked off of health insurance, and I, because he was covering our health insurance, and then we got kicked off by February 1st. And I'm like, oh, I don't have health insurance. They're like, no. And I'm like, what do I do now? So I had to find health insurance. So then I had, like, immediately do that. Then I had to cancel, like, credit cards and, you know, and bank accounts and figure out what he had, because he started some different things, even though a lot of our things were still connected. And we actually talked that we weren't going to change our beneficiaries of anything. We talked like, no, you're the mother of my children. You're the father of my children. Like, you're the beneficiary. You're the benefit. Like, if something happens, it goes to us. It's okay. So, but finalizing and doing all the paperwork, that's difficult when you have no idea what you're doing.
It's an incredible and daunting task, overwhelming task. I've helped it with part of our peer support. I've done it with some line of duty deaths. I can't imagine trying to do this solo with a suicide death.
And this it made it
just so much.
And it made it more difficult because we were legally divorced.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I was, so his next of kin, actually, I think was his mother, would be the next of kin, not his kids because they were minors. But his mother was in an assisted living with dementia. So on his death, I became her guardian.
Oh, how messy.
So I was taking care of her and had to take, I had to change things over and take care of her too. So then when he passed, I was left taking care of his mother and then our two children and trying to take care of all of her financials and medical, as well as my own household financial and medical.
How did the department interact with you here? And I'm not picking on the department. These are really difficult situations and events to try to navigate. How did the department, because I know that divorce piece would be really complicated.
They knew kind of what was going on. And in the beginning, it was like we were married. They kind of are like, okay, you know, the only reason why you got divorced is because he was ill. And I'm like, I know. And like, I know. And they said, if he wasn't ill, you wouldn't have been divorced. And I'm like, I know. So they treated me like a spouse. They treated me like we never got divorced. They asked me, there was somebody that they said, here's your main contact and whatever you need. So he got full services, like full honor guard, whatever I wanted. They said, you got.
Yeah, the funeral was, it looked amazing.
Yep. You know, so, and they walked me through. We actually went through, since it was COVID times too, we went through, you know, one of the officers and myself and my sister-in-law who came in from Texas. We all went together and went to three different churches to see, like, because we knew how many people were going to be there. And two of the churches are saying, sorry, we can't accommodate because of the regulations of COVID. And this last church, they're like, nope, we got you. As long as, you know, they have masks walking in, they can take their mask off while they're sitting. It's up to them. And I'm like, okay. And so then we had it all in one church because I didn't want it to be like separated into like three different rooms. So.
Well, that was such a crazy time for everybody. And it was incredibly hard to navigate any of that just by itself without, you know, a suicide of a loved one or a department member. But how about his coworkers? I'm not holding your feet to the fire to just speak for them,
no,
but give us a little glimpse. I mean, what was happening there as well?
So I was in contact with just two of his close friends. And the only two that I, who they contacted me, The rest of some of his really close friends didn't show up. Like his officers, they didn't show up to the service.
Because they were mad?
I'm not sure. I haven't talked to him since. So I'm not sure. One of them reached out and said, hey, I'm thinking about you and, you know, the kids, you know. I'm not sure if it was they were angry at him or if it was that they were so sad to lose him. I don't, you know, emotion wise, I'm not exactly sure. But there was a few of them that just could not, maybe it's from it. And then I'm like, maybe it was their own mental health. They couldn't do it. It was too much for them. I'm not sure. But there was a good handful that just never showed up.
There is a point, a part of the law enforcement community that won't go to a suicide funeral because it hits too close.
Yep.
That's their thought on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Now, they are not going to say that to you.
Of course not.
Admit that to you. But, you know, there's also the contingent of officers just don't go to funerals.
Yes.
You know, that's just not.
It's not. No, it's not easy. It's not an easy. I told my husband, I'm like, when I went to one, I'm like, I don't think I can go to another one. I'm like, you're going to have to go by yourself. I would love to be by your side, but I don't know if I physically can handle going to another police funeral. But the department was really good in the beginning. They had my back. They were there. They were supportive. And then once the funeral was over, like the service was over, and I'm thinking like maybe a week after that, I didn't hear from anybody. Besides like two of his good friends, I didn't hear from anybody. I didn't hear from the department, nobody. And I was just taken back thinking, did he say something about me and did they blame me? That was my biggest thing is, do they blame me for this? And I'm like, well, it doesn't matter if they blame me. I've got two kids that they should be checking up on. So for an entire year, I was like, I don't know where to go. And I contacted one of the officers that was his friend. I'm like, I need help. Like, please give me help. I don't know where to go, but I need help. And he's like, go to cops. I'm like, cops isn't for me. I said, I'm not considered. Do you see my cat in the back?
I do. You're having a good time back there.
I didn't even know she was.
Open up the window.
I didn't know she was in here. I tried to make sure everybody was out. Yeah, she wants her fame.
She wants to shed a little light in the situation there.
But so
for our listeners, just for our listeners that don't see maybe the visual of this, as we're talking, her cat is slowly creeping in over her left shoulder and opened the shades, the blinds to the window right over her shoulder. Yep. Which that's awesome.
That is too funny. So about like a year, I didn't really hear from anybody but the two of his good friends. And then one day I broke down in the city of Largo and I've had a flat tire. So I went to go fix it and put my spare on and my spare was flat. And I'm like, now what? So I contacted my friend. I said, are you in the city? Are you working? He's like, no, I'm called the comp center. They'll send people out to you. So they sent two cops out. One I knew, one I didn't. And he's like, oh, how are you doing? What's going on? So I told him what was going on. And he's like, I had no idea. He's like, I had no idea you guys were struggling. And I'm like, he just had no clue. From that point on, it's been open communication. We've had open communication from that point on because I've gone into the department and, you know, did pizza one day and I'm like, try to like have my presence there. I presented a plaque at the year mark of Brendan's services and, or like his, I guess from not necessarily his services, but his, it was like a memorial plaque.
Okay. His date of death.
Yeah. So, so I've tried to make myself present there. But from that year and a half in, whatever happened, there was like a switch And they're like, well, whatever you need, of course, we'll help you with. If you need somebody to come mow your lawn, just call us up and we'll help. So I don't know what it was, but something happened and we have an open communication between the department and myself. Anything I need.
You know, I'd love to pause you here, just get some experience speaking. This is not uncommon.
Okay.
And what I hear in your story is that it likely was not malicious or nefarious or intentional, but so many times when a loss of a department member, a department just pulls up their boots and goes back to work, and everybody just needs to move on. That is an utter disconnect to family members, coworkers. It really, in my experience, it sends a really difficult, if not tragic, message to the coworkers, which I've helped people navigate. But then, you know, collateral as well, this difficult message and maybe even a negative message to the family members of, okay, we did our part, you know, we got to go back to work.
Which, and I understand this, that too. Like,
right?
I understand, because they now have to protect the city. Like, I understand.
Yeah. But there are, I think, as we've grown in a culture and a community in law enforcement and first responderville, we've recognized, hey, like, well, for you, you'll forever be connected to Largo Police Department. There's just no getting around, you know, whether you like it or whether you don't, whether your kids like it or whether they don't, there would be always forever connection to Largo Police Department.
Yes.
And I think most of our community is recognizing, okay, and embracing, arguably, slowly, some agencies slower than others, some agencies faster than others, of saying, hey, this is part of our family. You know, when I used to talk, when I teach, I used to talk about a lot. I don't as much anymore, but I used to talk about this theme of God, family, country was the military, and it's formed from that, and it becomes God, family, organization. And we twist that around, and our family somewhere falls below that, and the organization just becomes premier, and we throw everything at. That's why we work so much. That's why. Now, thematically, the reason we do that is mission first, is because we are really good at our jobs. Mm-hmm. But the collateral damage for that is family just seems to fall short all the time. And it's a themology that we embrace oftentimes in our community. And the worst of it is these types of stories, to where I'm forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm over here and I'm hurting. My kids are hurting.
Yep.
And we're a part of you, but we don't feel a part of you.
Yep.
And am I wrong in that?
No, you're 100% correct. Yep.
And just by chance, this magic flat tire you have reconnects you with the department to, am I hearing this correctly, to almost a blessing end?
Yeah. And
oh, I love this.
It is. And
And I think the boldness of you saying, hey, we need you.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be left off the table.
No, it comes from both ends. Like, the both two parties have to come together. Like, they reaching out and me reaching for help as well. Cause they're like, we're here for you. We just didn't know what you needed. We didn't know what you needed. Absolutely. And I'm like, I didn't. And honestly, I didn't know what I needed either.
I don't know what I need either. Yeah.
So there it was. Yeah. It was a, yeah. And now I'm a part of their wellness team. So their care team, I'm part of that.
Oh, I love that. What do you do with their wellness team?
So, right now, the part that I really like would be for if something goes on, if I want to do some education, for the spouses, so that they can recognize things before it gets to the point where the department recognizes. Cause I notice things happening, and I did reach out to some friends, and they're like, nope, it's your marriage. Like, that's all it is. And I'm like, it is not my marriage. Cause if it was my marriage, he would be at work all the time, and he's having a hard time at work and having a hard time at home. So I know it's not the marriage. I mean, yeah, marriages go up and down. Things go crazy, of course. But I'm like, it's not the marriage. And so I noticed things and they were like, nope. But he was saying a different story, which was his truth. I would never say that he was lying. It was his truth. He truly believed whatever he believed and told his coworkers. But I know it wasn't the truth, but it was his truth.
Right.
Because I've heard stuff come back and I'm like, well, that never happened. Or that wasn't true. No, this didn't happen. They're like, oh, we just assumed that your marriage was falling apart. And I was like, no, we were totally fine until one morning he woke up and he wasn't himself. And they're like, oh, well, we didn't hear that story. And I'm like, but that was his story.
So back to the wellness.
Yeah. So
team.
Yep. It's doing some education. And then we also support the officers when they first get hired. If there's been any injuries, a new baby, a new marriage, like stuff like that, kind of help with the morale of the officers and say that, hey, we're here for you and we're here to help you. And if you need anything, as well as their spouses. So if something happens, that's what we're trying to get to, is that if something happens with an officer, well, all the other officers are trying to assess whatever happened. And then the family member is like, where do we do? Well, now you contact us and we can help you through that. And we can be there. And
I love that. If I can ask a couple of questions about your kids, and you just tell me no, sure, if those are off limits, but one part of it is, how are your kids doing now? And part two of that is, are your kids involved in this wellness piece as well? Do they get involved with any, like, or do you include them in any kind of, you know?
So my daughter has told me that she doesn't want to be a part of anything. She said, I'm doing my own thing. I talk to my friends. I'm okay. If I need any more support, I'll reach out to you. My son wants to be a part of certain things, but it's not handling things very well.
Sure.
So he's really angry right now.
Yeah, understandably.
So he's currently in therapy now, which I'm grateful for, but he's been very sad and angry. And no matter what I do, it's just not helping.
Sure, of course.
But he's also a 16-year-old boy.
I was just actually thinking that. I wasn't going to say it because you have two teenagers, mm-hmm, not just one. You have two teenagers. And I remember the teen days. Those are sassy, emotional roller coaster days.
Yes.
And I had boys. So that's a mission in and of itself. You know, without,
yes,
something as so heavy and difficult,
yes,
as what you're talking about.
So they don't.
Well,
they don't
on get behalf of involved. The listeners, uh-huh, I will offer this up because I know I have a pulse on most of our listeners. We love you and your kids, and we want the best for you. And for those out there that have higher power, we would call on you to pray for Gina and her kids.
Thank you.
As they navigate. Continue to navigate something really difficult. So if we transition again, mm-hmm, and kind of as we wrap up, there's a couple of things I want to offer up, but I don't want to leave without you offering your point of view on this Survivors of Blue Suicide piece, because you're also doing something great there.
Yes.
How did that connect happen? And what has that organization done to help you?
So with them, I don't know how I found them, because nobody in Largo Police Department, they just said, call cops. And then I'm like, cops isn't. So I just did, I think I wrote, like, Googled cops and suicide. And it somehow magically popped up, because I know I've looked for it before and nothing popped up. So maybe I wasn't ready to accept them yet. And whatever happened, I immediately filled out a form. I got a contact from, I believe, Lori.
Lori, I'm sure it was, mm-hmm, Lori.
And then they started with the Zoom calls for support. And
by the way, how do you feel about Lori?
My God, I love them. They're amazing. Like, Lori and Shelly are amazing people. They are wonderful. They work a lot.
They are such good human beings.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it was anybody else, it wouldn't have worked. Them, the two of them together are perfect.
She has, yes, they both have humongous hearts, mm-hmm. but I'm telling you, Lori has such a gift.
Yes.
And such a big heart to work with survivors all day, every day. That's all she works with is survivors.
Oh, yeah.
Or you too.
Yep. Yeah. Because if I called her and I'm like, I'm not doing well. And she's like, all right, let's talk. And I'm like, okay. And she's like, all right, let's just talk it through. She's like, all right, if you need anything, you contact me again. I'm like, okay. But yeah, wonderful people. Oh, she's
such a great organization. Yes. Okay, I sidetracked a little bit. So you got connected with Lori and Shelly.
I got connected with Lori and Shelly. And at that time, I don't even remember what month it was. It had to have been closer to the year mark. And then they had their spouse retreat. And then mm-hmm. the next month was their conference. And I told them, I'm like, listen, I can only go to one because I have a fear of flying. And they're like, okay, like what? And I said, which one would you recommend the best? And then, oh, not the best, but like right now. And so Lori's like, well, they're both really good. I can't tell you which one is. She's like, and so I said, well, one is two planes to get and one is one plane to get. I said, if I just pick the one plane option, like I will do it if you say that that's, you know, 100. She's like, no. So I went to the conference because it took one plane to get to Indiana. Oh, so I got there. I finally met everybody. That changed my life. It changed my life. The people that I met, the other widows that I met, the other family members that I met, Shelly and Lori and their staff alone that came and talked.
Let's dive into that just a little bit. When you say it changed their life, what changed? What was the impact?
I felt alone and lost because I was divorced. And I didn't know exactly, like, my husband was a detective, you know, an officer. And I'm like, where do I go from here? Like, my life is now changed forever. And I don't know anybody who understands the life of a police officer's life, the wife, you know, or the spouse's portion of it, on top of losing them to suicide. It wasn't just a regular death. It was a suicide death, which brings in a whole nother portion because I didn't have that support financially and I didn't have that support, you know, emotionally. I had I'm alone. What do I do now? Like, I don't know anybody else who understands what I'm dealing with until I went to this conference and talked to some of the other widows. And they're like, oh no, like we're in the same boat. And you didn't have to say anything. It was just a look and you knew that they understood. So it's hard to like fully explain, but I felt like I found my family. So
family, not family, right?
A family that you never wanted to be a part of, but you're grateful that they're there. Yeah. I'll never wish that upon anybody else ever, because I don't want anybody to be in this family. If this family stays this big and that's it, I am happy because I don't want anybody else to feel what I felt and my family felt. Not at all.
Well, it's really sad. It's a sad testament that we need an organization like this, but it's a blessing that we have an organization like this. And I share your desire to have no more suicides, but the painful reality is we will.
Oh, I know. Unfortunately, I would love it to just decrease. I know we can't stop it for good, but if we can decrease, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hey, listen.
Yep.
I like... I like doing a couple things as we kind of close out. One is I want to, and I'm going to prompt you here. I'll give you a little bit of space and time to think about this, but I want to give you the opportunity to, if there's somebody out here in listener land that is in the same position you're in, what would you recommend for them? And then part, you know, how do you navigate their, maybe they're a widow or widower of suicide death, and what advice of how to navigate life after would you give them? And then two, also how to get a hold of some of these resources, if it's survivors of suicide, or, you know, where would you navigate them as well?
So first, the advice would be, you're not alone. It wasn't your fault. No matter what you think, you couldn't have stopped it.
Yeah.
And that you have a family now that totally understands and will support you in every love aspect that. From now on.
I love that.
Yeah. And you'll never be, never, I'm like, I am never alone.
Well, I certainly don't want to put words in your mouth, but would you steer them to survivors of suicide?
Oh, 100%.
Or would you steer them to?
Oh, 100%.
How would they get a hold of SBS?
So it's survivorsofbluesuicide.org. No, is it .org?
I think so.
Oh, now I'm like.
I think so.
I think it's survivors.
I was laughing because I did the. I was laughing because I did the SBS. It is.
Yep.
Survivorsofbluesuicide.org.
Yep. .org. And yep. then all it is, you put survivor and you fill out the form, and then the rest is, I mean, then everything is taken care of. Oh, if honestly, without them, I wouldn't be here. I would be here, but I don't know if I would have moved forward as much as I have and moved. Yeah. Through life without that support from this group. Oh, yeah. 100%.
They're amazing. They're an amazing group of survivors.
Yep.
A lot of love, a lot of hurt, a lot of pain talked about, but man, you just, every time you're around them, you feel nothing but love from those survivors.
Yes.
Amazing group. Gina, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Mm-hmm. We're honored by it. And again, I will be praying for you family, specifically Sean, as he navigates this.
Yes.
Without his dad, it's tough being a man in this world, growing into manhood.
Yes.
So I pray that he navigates that well.
Thank you.
So we love you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Chateau Health and Wellness is a 16-bed treatment facility nestled in the foothills of the Wasatch Mountains in Midway, Utah. Chateau's First Responder Resiliency Program is designed to treat the unique challenges and issues that first responders encounter in the course of their careers. Chateau's comprehensive and highly individualized approach to treatment addresses more than just the presenting issues. It addresses the why. Each of their seasoned, trauma-trained, and culturally competent therapists utilize evidence-based, specialized therapies to treat trauma at its core and enable clients to begin the healing process while developing a resilient and healthy relationship with stress. Chateau Health and Wellness is trusted by departments and agencies from around the country to treat responders and veterans. In fact, it is one of only a handful of facilities nationwide that is vetted and approved to treat members of the Fraternal Order of Police. For more information or to speak to a representative, go to chateaurecovery.com or call 888-507-5031.